glory Shri Guru Shri Gauranga,
all glory Shri Guru and Gauranga Glish
Prabhupada. Who's on today?
Well, we are.
Did Shanti finish his presentation?
Shanti Parayan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so then is now is. Yes. So from then now is. Prahlad Narasinghe Prabhu.
Oh, we should welcome Sri Prahlad Prabhu.
Ah, yes.
Caught him. Hi, Mo. And actually, not to tip too much up, but we are expecting at any moment the arrival of a very honored and exceptional guest to our class. We will not reveal him, his name, until he actually comes, not to disappoint anyone, but I think he's on the way. He's a man of many surprises, so he may be among us before we even notice it. Yes, so today we're starting off with Prahlad Narasinghe Prabhu, and then followed by Uttam Shloka Prabhu. Yes? And then Sri Gandharvika Devidasi. And that's it? Okay. So we have three scheduled. That's a very nice number. And remember, just one last reminder before the presentation begins, that today is the last day. Yeah, by the end of the class, you should turn in your proposal for presentation so we can schedule it for next week. Because after today, the gate closes. Those who do not turn in anything will be given this essay question. And you'll be responsible to return this with an answer on Monday. And those who do volunteer today, then depending on how many do volunteer, Monday, Tuesday, like that, we'll continue to schedule presentations until we reach that day that we know how many questions we shall accept from you. And we shall reserve one day from that. All right, then, Prahlad Narasinghe Prabhu.
Thank you, Maharaj.
I just introduced you. So it's redundant if you introduce yourself again. But this is Sri Prahlad Narasinghe Prabhu. Remember, we'd like everyone to introduce themselves because the shape and form of our total class changes every day. There are always sometimes new faces. All right, Prabhu, go ahead. Thank you.
My dear Guru Maharaj gave me the name Prahlad Narasinghe Das. His Holiness Pancharavida Swami Maharaj. In his absence, I took shelter of His Divine Grace, Chaitanya Swami Maharaj. I'm from Ecuador, South America. And Maharaj was reading about how Lord Krishna's face and personality is like a daily festival. So he was reading that in Dwarka, the appearance of the personality of Godhead is a daily festival for the devotees. So in the Nivesha, in the verse 26, said that the Lord chest is said to be the abode of the goddess of fortune. His face is the vessel from which our eyes that hunker to see a beautiful things should drink. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he's talking with Sanatan Goswami, somehow or other he was describing the personality of Godhead. He started feeling so much ecstasy and his Madhuri relationship with the Lord started awakening. So he started describing the personality of Godhead as an ocean of ambrosia. He said that this Madhura Sindhu, this ocean of nectar, this is the personality of Godhead, gets enhanced by the rising moon that is his face. So he compares the face of Lord Krishna like Sumadura Mukha Hindu, this rising face of the Lord in the ocean of ambrosia is his body. So his body represents all all beauty. And Lord Chaitanya also describes another verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, who said that the body of Lord Krishna is full of moons. His toenails are like moon. His fingertips, when playing the flute, they dance like moons. His face himself is a moon. His cheeks are like moons. The chandan that has been put in his forehead looks like full moons, golden full moons. His forehead is like a half moon. So he is considered the king of the moons. His face is the king of all moons. He said that the Sinhasana is the body, and the king of moons, his face is sitting in this Sinhasana. So Lord Chaitanya keep describing the beauty of Lord Krishna. And he is getting more and more intoxicated with it. And he is saying that he now is experiencing some kind of disease, vasita. It is like convulsions, because he has been drinking this ambrosia so much that he's having like convulsions. And Srila Prabhupada, in the purport of this particular verse, said that when it's a transformation of vata, pitta, and kapha, there is some particular disease, these convulsions. So Lord Chaitanya is saying that this doctor is so restrictive, he don't even take one drop of this ambrosia, he don't let me take. So he's comparing these three dhatus as the beauty of Lord Krishna's body, the beauty of Lord Krishna's face, and the most difficult to behold is the smile, the sweet smile of Lord Krishna. So he was saying that these three things have created this disease on him. And he somehow or other, he got so much into ecstasy that he starts describing to Sanatana Goswami things that he was not intended to describe. And he said that the beauty of Lord Krishna's face is so that it even becomes even sweeter when this nectar of the sweet smile of Krishna is put on the flute. And this nectar goes through the holes of the flute and then permeates the whole atmosphere and goes into even Vaikuntha. And then the goddess of fortune herself, she got completely desirous to see the beautiful face of Krishna, even though she's the most chaste of all personalities, the wife of Narayanas. And Lakshmis, they all get completely bewildered when they hear this sweet tone of the flutes of Krishna. So even though Lord Krishna and Lord Vishnu are the same, they say that Lord Krishna holds the flute as one of these extra characteristics. So it looks like it's just an extra characteristic, what is the big difference with just holds a flute. But the flutes of Krishna, they enable to bring the devotees to higher and higher rasas. And the Nectar of Devotion explained that he has three kinds of flutes. One is the Bamsi, Murali, and Venu. The Venu is very short and mainly uses for pasting the cows. And he used very beautiful tunes that enhance the beauty of the atmosphere of the paradise where he is situated, and the rivers and the deers and all living entities, they flow with this sound. But with the Murali, he is even higher. This sound of Murali flute is very pleasing to the cowherd boys, and is like more chivalrous, more playful way of different kinds of tunes. But when he plays his Bamsi flute, they enters in the heart of the gopis. He has different sizes of flutes, and the ones who are more deep, the more longer flutes, they create such a deep vibration. There is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was describing to Sanatana Goswami that this vibration of Lord Krishna's Bamsi, Akarshini flute, is so deep that even though their wives, their gopis, are situated in the lap of their husbands discussing, joking, they're immediately broken. Their meditation is broken and they have to run away to hear where is this sound coming from. So he said that the sound of Krishna's flute is so forceful that breaks the meditation or any activity that the gopis are completely engaged on. So we see that the difference between Lord Vishnu and Lord Krishna is not just an extra item, but it's actually the sweetness of Lord Krishna's face, Lord Krishna's personality and pastimes. So Lakshmi Devi here is described as being situated in the chest of Lord Krishna. And the Maharaj is putting in the Bhagavad Samdharva, Sri Jiva Goswami explained, the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself describes the potencies of Sri, the goddess of fortune, in these words, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 16:7. Because I am the servitor of my devotee, my lotus feet have become so sacred that they immediately wipe out all sin. And I have acquired such a disposition that the goddess Sri does not leave me. Even though I have no attachment for her, another praise her beauty and observe sacred vows to secure her slight favor. So here we see that the Lord Krishna is not attached to the most beautiful and chaste of all personalities, but it's just one side of his personality. Like we, if someone has a double personality in psychology, he's considered someone who is abnormal. But Lord Krishna has different kinds of personalities. He exhibits so many varieties of qualities. Like I said, that the face is the index of the mind. So Lord Krishna, because he has so many varieties of qualities, his face is enhanced by all these different thoughts and desires that he manifests. So here also in the Srimad Bhagavatam and also in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami explains that Lord Krishna has specifically four different kinds of personalities. One is Dhirodhata. He's very sober, very kind to the devotees. He's always trying to do anything necessary to satisfy and to protect the devotees. Like when Indra is, after he has created so much havoc in Vrindavan, Indra is saying, "You are so kind, even though I have created so much trouble, you're becoming so pleased just by my prayers. Just with because of prayers and repentance, you already have forgiven such offense. And not only that, but you have lifted the Govardhan hill in such an expert manner to protect your devotees. You have created so much endeavor to just give protection to the devotees." So this will be one of his qualities as Dhirodhar. Other one is Dhira Lalita. And Dhira Lalita is when the person is very funny. Lord Krishna has this mood of being very funny, very expert in flirting with the gopis, with his wives. And he said that this Dhira Lalita personality of Lord Krishna is like being completely domesticated by his wives or by his lovers. And it's explained there that, for example, the pastime when Radharani and the gopis are sitting, discussing different things, and Lord Krishna comes in the middle and just starts talking very impudently about the pastimes with Radharani the night before. So Radharani gets completely ashamed, it gets completely bewildered and stunned. The moment she is stunned, that moment is writing some tilak verses in her breast. So this is a very playful way of Lord Krishna. And maybe someone misinterpreted how is Lord Krishna, like Maharaj was saying, that Krishna is attracted to play with beautiful women. Not the beautiful women are attracted to Lord Krishna. So at the same time that he is expressing such intimate activities with the gopis or with the Lakshmis, at the same time he's completely detached and exhibit this quality too. It's called Dhirodhata, where he is just completely unattached. Sometimes even he manifests qualities like being envious, like it looks like an envious person. Like when he was writing a letter to Kalayavana, the demon who was killed by Muchukunda, and he's saying, "You sinful frog," he's writing Lord Krishna, "you sinful frog, better find a good black hole to hide, because me, the snake called Krishna, is going to devour sinful frogs." So it looks like a very angry way of Lord Krishna describing. He's saying, "And I want to remind you that I can burn to ashes all the universe just by my sight." And it's actually the way that Muchukunda killed Kalayavana, by bringing him to ashes. So Lord Krishna manifests so many varieties of personalities. And also in the pastimes with Lord Krishna, with Rukmini, that is explained that are the same as Lakshmi and Narayan. Lord Krishna sets this to Rukmini in a joking manner. As you remember the pastime, the talks between Krishna and Rukmini. She is fanning Lord Krishna very beautifully with all the other servants. And Lord Krishna is very joking, start talking to her. "There actually was a mistake from your side to just choose me as the husband. Why you don't choose some other exalted kings who were present there? I'm not even Akshatra. Nobody knows who I am. I'm penniless." And he starts describing all kind of bad qualities that he possesses. "I think the Narada misguide you. I really not have such exalted qualities as you was thinking." So Rukmini is becoming more and more bewildered by the words of Krishna. And at one point Lord Krishna said, "And actually, it's because you wrote me that letter that I went there to rescue. It's not that I'm really attached to you. Just like my devotees, I'm not so much into family life. I'm not so into grihastha life. I'm just really detached. But just because it was my duty as a kshatriya, as acting as a kshatriya, to go and rescue you. But I'm not really attached to you." And so he said, "So please go and choose another husband. You better leave me and go and choose another husband who will be more suitable for you." So in that moment, Srimati Lakshmi Devi, in the form of Rukmini Devi, she got completely stunned. and she hung her head and started crying profusely, and all the limbs of her body become slack. Even she lost so much weight that the armrests start falling on the floor. Her hair gets scattered out of different kinds of emotions, and she just fell on the floor like a banana tree was being cut by a whirlwind. In that moment, Lord Krishna immediately showed his four-handed form and lifted Rukmini, put her over the bed, in a very gentle way, hold her over her chest, and arranging her hair, start telling very nice words to her. That actually I was expecting this kind of behavior from you, but actually I was trying to just make you angry, because you are so perfect in your demeanor. You're so perfect in your service that you never get angry. You never get, I want to see you irritated. I want you to look at me with unblinking eyes, really angry, and see your lips tremble. But instead, I see that you have taken it very seriously. So we see that even though he's completely unattached to her, at the same time when he sees that she is showing so much emotions out of attachment for him, he's showing completely another side of him, another personality where he's giving complete assurance to her in loving her in the most gentle manner. So we cannot categorize Lord Krishna as a detached person who performs his pastimes without taste. No, he just goes, all these different personalities and qualities of Lord Krishna goes on in his pastimes. And then after Srimati Rukmini Devi, when she regained consciousness, she said, actually, your detachment from me is not astonishing. It's just really befitting you because you're completely independent. So you are not attached to me, that's okay for me. If you are attached or not to me, I will continue performing my service. But because you are the creator of the mode of passion, when you look at me with passionate glances, this for me is the ultimate perfection. Am I always hankering for these passionate glances? So sometimes Lord Krishna will manifest other move. And Rukmini Devi is saying, just like Lord Chaitanya, if you embrace me or if you push me away, I still want to be your servant life after life. So here in this particular verse, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, he becomes dependent on his devotees. So that the more the devotee shows his love to Krishna, Krishna is completely dependent, and he always will reciprocate with taste, will reciprocate in the same way. So what we also should see here, and for our point of view, is, at least for myself, is what is taking me, or what is between me and this unlimited nectar to able to contemplate the form of Krishna? What is in between? What is keeping me apart from...
Excuse me, but we have to welcome His Holiness Dhanadhar Maharaj.
Dhanadhar
Maharaj Ki Jai! I'm very honored by your presence. We know you don't want to make a big spectacle here, so... Or we'll just sit there, and Radha Shringa Prabhu is just flooding our ears with real nectar, so we ask you to continue, because this is why Maharaj has come, also to hear the nectar.
So, like this, what is keeping us between us and to able to contemplate this form of Krishna, the Lord Chaitanya describes as the embodiment of all beauty and sweetness. What is between that? So we have to... put in the balance, what is the use of everything else if we can also taste one day this nectar the Lord Chaitanya is describing. And at the end of this conversation, Lord Chaitanya is saying, it's by the will of Lord Krishna that I have become mad, and I have describing things that I was not intending to describe, and I have started relishing the beauty of the face, the body, and the sweet smile of Lord Krishna. But it's for your benefit. So for us also, Srila Prabhupada is so kind to describe the personality of Godhead to us. Through these different writings, like Maharaj was saying, in the books of Srila Prabhupada is everything. Is the rasa is there. But we have to also go through all the steps necessary to first clean the heart. Just 2 days ago, I read one of these paragraphs in Srila Prabhupada, this calendar that is there that the devotees have. And Srila Prabhupada is saying, the cheater becomes a teacher. It's very easy to become a teacher, even though being a cheater. And we have to analyze our character to be able to teach. If we don't have a character, how we can teach? we become cheaters. So the same way, Srila Prabhupada gave us the process step by step so we can first clean all the misconceptions in the heart so we can become purified. And then we can really relish the nectar of the Krishna's personality and pastimes and entourage in his devotees. So I beg forgiveness for any mispronunciation, misrepresentation. English is not my language, but I try somehow to describe, even though I always get in trouble trying to describe something that is not befitting me yet. I'll give you the opportunity.
Last night I was with His Holiness Dhanadhar Maharaj. We were speaking also, among other things, like Aikido and what's it like in Northeast USA preaching that Maharaj does. He was also revealing some very nice nectarian aspects of the most more nectarian and confidential aspects of Krishna consciousness that Sri Jiva Goswami discusses in the Bhakti Sandarbha. I'd like to humbly ask Maharaj if, from what you heard just now, if there's anything you'd like to enlighten us with. He was just talking of the beauty of Sri Krishna that Prabhupada mentions in the purport to verse 26 of chapter 11. I'll just review that very briefly, where he says that the Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess Fortune. His face is a vessel from which your eyes that hanker to see all beautiful things should drink. The administrative demigods are sheltered in his strong arms, and his lotus feet are the shelter of devotees who have no other topic than Krishna to speak or sing about. And then Prabhupada writes this very beautiful purport in which he, there's actually four classes of persons. And he spends a lot of time with the beauty of Lord Krishna and his relationship with the goddess of fortune. And this is mainly what Prahlad Nrisimha Prabhu is discussing. So I'd just like to know, Maharaj, if there's anything, any drop of mercy you might like to bestow upon us now.
I could probably say why I wouldn't speak now. And after saying that, probably speak the whole time.
Great.
So, I'm just kind of coming into something that's been built up. So there's a certain frame of reference probably that the audience has from being in the exchanges that I don't have. And I think to communicate properly, you actually have to be cognizant of the frame of reference of your audience. And not only that, it's been going on for several days. So it would take me a little bit more time. You know, otherwise I could just say something. But it would kind of be like when there's like someone gives a class, a good class, it's all connected to the particular point that's being spoken, and therefore it gives everything that's said a certain dynamicism.
Yes, so, but you see, just as you were arriving, Lord Nrisimha Prabhu was telling how Lord Chaitanya, in his speaking tattva to Sanatana Goswami, suddenly became overwhelmed and began to talk like a madman about the beauty of Lord Krishna, and that's where he compares him to the 24 and a half moons.
Yeah. You know that part. Yeah. So, if you would just begin to speak, this is right in the mood of where we are at this moment in this class. If it just starts to flow from your mouth, because Lord Nrisimha has prepped us for that. So we're eager right now, all of us. Isn't it true?
Yes!
See? So this is called spontaneous devotional service, otherwise known as Raga Nuga Bhakti. Right, Maharaj? You often speak about that. Please.
Thank you.
Maharaj is, he's our old friend. Very humble Vaishnava. So this is an austerity for him, I want you to understand. But we're so eager for some, like bees, for some nectar from his lotus-like mouth.
I still have the same inhibition for the reason I spoke. You know what I'm saying? It's I want to fit in. And I still don't feel comfortable that... But I can comment on one thing that Prabhu was saying. I'm never a shortage of words, but which I think is very interesting is that he was talking about that the step-by-step process of actually appreciating Krishna's beauty. And, you know, and it's the same point that, and this is something I've been focusing on, is when truth is spoken, it's not enough to just speak truth. It's important that you don't only speak truth, that you make sure it's understood, and you make sure that the audience has the proper frame of reference to understand it. Because in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, it says, Param Satyam Dhimahi. The very beginning, it gives the conclusion. That's bhakti. Bhakti means dhimahi, to meditate on the Param Satyam, the absolute truth. But there's so many cantos that are presented. And I came up with the concept that the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to help you hear without prejudice. And therefore, the Bhagavatam does two things. It clears up your... To hear without prejudice, you have to... Because the nature of the intelligence is to process information. And the intelligence processes information based on its experience. So unless the intelligence is actually purified, even though the absolute truth is spoken, the absolute truth won't be understood. So the Bhagavatam actually purifies the intelligence of misconceptions and attachments. Anyway, I don't want to continue because I don't feel
well,
like
we are so eager that you do continue, Maharaj.
Okay.
You can't just put out a little crumb of such okay. sweetness and then withdraw yourself from it. You have to follow through.
Okay, anyway.
You made us, you know, like you take a little sweet, you get more hungry. Okay. And you need to take more to become satisfied.
It's also difficult for me to speak because usually I'm very regulated and I stayed up last night till 1 o'clock.
Yes, with the man.
So I just woke up and came here, so I just like
one madman came to his house, his room the other night.
No, it really I have an inhibition of speaking unless I'm cognizant of where the audience is at. And
we're all with you, Maharaj. Don't worry. Please.
No, there's so many. I'll speak another subject. Okay?
Okay.
The beauty of Krishna. Actually, I was just in Bangalore. And, you know, I came to the temple there. Jagannath Mandir, and they asked me to speak in the evening. And I just picked the Bhagavad Gita, and I just let it fall and open, because I didn't know what I would speak on. And it actually spoke exactly about that, Soumya Rupa, the 11th canto, when Arjuna, when Krishna again reveals his two-handed form. Prabhupada has a very, very beautiful purport, Soumya Rupa, the exquisite beauty of Krishna, that Krishna is the most attractive. And specifically, this is in Bhakti Sandarbha, it describes that the ultimate principle of spiritual advancement is absorption in the absolute reality. That's actually how we advance. And then I was discussing with you last night that naturally you're more absorbed in things that you like to do than you have to do.
And the reason why spontaneous devotional service or rag bhakti is recommended is because, and this is Prabhupada presented so clearly, because it's the principle of absorption due to some emotional connection with the object of your meditation. And most of the verses that are discussed there are the seventh canto, the beginning of the seventh canto, because the beginning of the seventh canto, it describes with the Rajasuya sacrifice, where Krishna is, you know, he's just made the topmost person, and then Sishupal, who's very envious of Krishna, you know, as they say in India, you know, verbally abuses Krishna. And at the 100th abuse, verbal abuse, then Krishna killed him. And then they saw that Sishupal, his soul, came and then went into the you know, merged with Krishna. And it was amazing because Sishupal, it's described, had so much enmity towards Krishna that it was spontaneous because he wasn't trained, because it described, even when he was a child, in broken language, he couldn't even speak. He was saying, you know, Krishna, bad, bad, I don't like... He was just, even when he couldn't speak, he was cursing Krishna. So he had so much enmity towards Krishna. And Yudhisthira was watching this. And as Yudhisthira was watching this, he was amazed how so... So the whole principle, that was... This was actually the verses that Jiva Goswami uses to exemplify Raghunuga Bhakti, because it showed that it was from the heart, it was actually an emotional connection. He was so absorbed in Krishna that very, very quickly he became purified and attained liberation. So, anyway, Jiva Goswami is actually, you know, he's going through all these verses and the commentaries and explaining, and then, of course, explaining that, I mean, at this point, has to that we can't follow the path of enmity, because it won't be spontaneous. Because we weren't, you know, so-called born to hate Krishna. He describes Jai and Vijay. But the point, it's called the Kaimutya principle. Hmm. Kaimutya principle in logic means, what is it? What to speak of. And he explains this principle, what to speak of, in Nyaya, that it means that it's not actually confirming the first thing. It's actually present. Therefore, what to speak of people who naturally like Krishna. Hmm. And then it was explaining that we have to come to this platform of liking Krishna in our activities. And it explains very carefully, if you don't have that natural liking, you have to perform Vaidhi Bhakti. You have to go by the rules. And if you don't go by the rules, you're a hypocrite. But he says at the same time, we have to be very, very cognizant that the purpose of the rules is to focus the consciousness to give us this natural absorption. And then he explained that if you're just practicing Krishna consciousness just because it's a rule, in other words, because the whole idea of Vidhi is that there's Shakti in the rule. But we shouldn't just, for example, go to Mangal Artik because it's a rule. In other words, we're not focused in our consciousness, we're not trying to develop some attachment, but we're going because we have to go, and because there's potency in the rule. If you go to Mangal Artik, you'll make advancement. But if you do it in that way, just because it's a rule, you don't get the real Shakti, which is Bhakti. Bhakti means the absorption. So he recommends in our Krishna consciousness, although we're obligated to follow the rules, that we should try to become absorbed. We should be conscious of that principle, not just to chant 16 rounds just to pull down the beads, I've completed. But to actually really be, and he said that even if you have no attachment, you can mix that absorption in a very, very natural way. And he gave the example of chanting the Gopal mantra. You can do it because I have to chant my Gayatris every day. Or you can do it cognizant, you know, that it's a mantra, it has the names, and therefore, he said, you could think of the meaning of the mantra, you could meditate on the mantra, you can think of Krishna and his associates,
You can think that the goal of the mantra is Goloka Vrindavan. You can think that Srila Prabhupada is there, that you also have an eternal relationship. You can aspire for that. So I was really meditating on this point that in our spiritual practices, we really have to be cognizant that the goal is that absorption and developing attachment. And in that regard, I thought of the Shikshastakam by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in the Shikshastakam by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains what happens if you don't have taste.
That's his commentary to the...
The second verse. Because
yeah.
There's Cheto Darpanam Marjanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam Shreyakar. There's all these treasures of the holy name. And then we're chanting the holy name. And we're thinking, but I have no taste. And then he says, Etadrasi Tava Kripa Bhagavan Mamapi Durdaivam. I have no devotion. So what I thought is that's a perfect example of not having taste, but developing some emotional connection. Because what you're saying is, I have no devotion. So it's actually bringing it down to the heart, which will lead to that absorption. You don't have taste, and you can do if you don't have taste, and you can say, okay, I'm just going to finish my rounds. You know, I promise to chant my rounds. Or you can actually think that, no, the purpose of bhakti is absorption. I'm not absorbed. I have no devotion. And that actually brings it to the platform of the heart and actually invokes. And the reason I'm bringing this up in terms of Krishna being all attractive, because then he comes to the point, the reason why, although the basic definition of Raganuga Bhakti is to worship with a liking, because it'll give you more absorption, that's the goal, rather than just an obligation or duty. But after he explains this basic principle, he explains why Raganuga Bhakti means to follow the Ragatmaka Bhakti, the Bhaktas in Vrindavan. And the reason is because Krishna is the manifestation of that absolute reality, which is the full manifestation of the absolute reality in response to the intimate love of his devotees in a setting, Vrindavan, that's conducive to that intimate love. So it's the same absolute reality, but fully manifest, and therefore has those fully manifest means the most beautiful. And therefore, if you talk about absorption, the absorption in Krishna is most intense because he's the most beautiful. And therefore, if we, in our line, we feel if we really want to become fully absorbed in the absolute reality, we have to ultimately follow those who have the most intense absorption. And the most intense absorption are the residents of Vrindavan, specifically because Krishna is the most beautiful. Soumya Rupa.
I think I know what Vyasadeva felt like when Narada Muni came. That was beautiful, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
I was going to say something in response, but I forgot the facts. I probably know how... What is it? No. It was the wrong analogy. Something with Balaram and Romaharshana Sutta, but I was going to be Romaharshana Sutta. Then I realized I gave the knowledge. I'm the one that came. Very nice.
Well, we didn't... infinitely blessed by the spontaneity. Spontaneously, Maharaj has come and made a contribution to our class, which is, I think, we almost agree, has really flooded our ears and our hearts with nectar. So, again, in the new tradition of ISKCON, let us thank His Holiness Thanatar Maharaj by three very loud Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Hari Bol! Jai Maharaj.
That's nice. That works here.
So, actually, yes, we have 15 minutes. And
Uttam Shloka Prabhu, will you be able to, in 15 minutes, say what you wanted to say? Because, as I said, we can always carry over to Monday. You don't have to worry about being of compressing your presentation unnecessarily. Okay. So please come forward. And again, introduce yourself, because there's always new faces. Oh, just, you can come up front.
So my name is Uttama Shlokadas, and my presentation will be on the verses 28 through 33 of this 11th chapter, according to the summary. Should I speak louder? Huh?
Yes.
Okay. Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langete grin tat kripatam aham vande shri gurum devatare vancha kapatrubhyascha kripa santu devacha vachitanam pavane pyo vaishnavyo. Since I have neither knowledge nor realization what to speak of devotion, and it's happening only by the mercy of our teachers, I ask all of you to please bless me with the ability to say something useful as well as interesting. So, this particular section describes Lord Shri Krishna proceeding to his father's palace, and his mother's, headed by Devaki, embraced Krishna, and in turn he offered his obeisances unto them by placing his head at their feet. And Nivesha to this is that in the purport to 28th verse, Srila Prabhupada lists seven kinds of mothers. The verse states that all the different mothers present,
of all
the different mothers present, Devaki was his real mother. So, in general, it's very interesting to see that two chapters, 10 and 11, stand back to back. That chapter 10 specifically describes Vipralamba, separation from the Lord. Lord is leaving to go to Dwaraka, and chapter 11 describes Samboga, union, meeting with the Lord after long separation. And as it was pointed out by Maharaj, that this is where really Krishna is coming into the picture, as, you know, dealing with his intimate devotees in the most intimate way. Well, not the most intimate way, but in a very intimate way, in a very personal way. So, and one of the examples how he is dealing with his devotees is manifested in how he is dealing with his mothers. This is a very unusual concept for Westerners, to have not one mother but many mothers, seven types of mothers, and Krishna is dealing with all of them in a very caring way. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining that this is actually the principle showed in this particular description, that by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada we can understand all the principles behind all these descriptions. As Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj keeps reminding us, that mother is our first guru, and father is next after her, and then teacher, and then sadguru, acharya. And this is the principle, that if somebody has proper dealing with the superiors, then one is getting all kinds of blessings. And of course, this cultural angle faded quite substantially due to the influence of Kali Yuga, and many of us were victims, even though not very innocent victims of this kind of mentality. So in the name of practicality, respect and care for seniors is dropped to a large extent, and it is even influencing our own society. And a very short story I wanted to bring up to illustrate this point, what actually this kind of mentality creates. That the story goes as follows. There was one man in the kingdom, family man, and the king of this kingdom was a very practical man. He was complete atheist, in other words. And he passed out the law. And the law was stating that all the elderly members of the society who cannot be active anymore, who cannot produce, you know, take part in economic development, you know, they didn't have the old age homes at the day. And King was suggesting that you take these elderly people, basically parents, and, you know, take them to the forest and drop there in the forest. Let them, you know, help them to renounce the world like this. So, and this man in this family, he had aged very old father, and this father was, you know, completely disabilitated. He was disabled, and actually it gave him a lot of headache. Take care, you know, caring for this father, and he thought, well, this is actually not bad idea, you know. I should follow King's order. And then he put his father on a cart, and he started pulling the cart towards the forest. And his young son, of this man, he requested the father to take him alone to the forest. And, you know, even though this man, he was doing this thing, but in the heart of hearts, he had the feeling that he's not really doing the right thing. And, well, his little son was going with him. And when he went to the forest, to the depth of the forest, and he left the cart, and he turned around and he started walking back. And his son was walking with him, and then his son was pulling him by his clothes, telling, "Father, could we please take the cart back home?" And the father, being not in the best mood, he was saying, you know, "Forget the cart, what are you talking about? Just let the cart remain." But the son was saying, no, we should take the cart, because after some time, you will become old and disabled, and I can use the same cart to take you to the forest. So, you know, this is example of being practical. Kali Yuga example. So, you know, this is the danger, you know, whatever, you know, as Lord Sri Krishna says regarding himself, that yeyatamam prapadyate, whatever, you know, that, you know, relationships are always reciprocal. This is the psychological principle of the world, so we should be very careful in regards to how we deal with others, especially seniors, because it may come back. Like that, maybe from the other side. So anyway, continuing in here, when the mothers sat Krishna upon their laps, milk began to flow from their breasts due to intense parental affection, and the tears from their eyes wetted his body. Then Krishna entered his own palace, Nibesha. In purport to 31st text, Srila Prabhupada sweetly explains the transcendental miracle of Sri Krishna's intimacy with his 16,108 wives, each of whom dwelt in her own splendid palace. The purport ends with the summary of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's fivefold analysis of the psychology displayed by the queens during this reunion with the Lord. So this is the end of the Nivesha. So, in general, we can see that a lot of descriptions, especially in these chapters, dedicated to women in Krishna's pastimes. And why it is so, Srila Prabhupada actually explains that he reveals the mystery behind. In one of his purports, and this is also a point Maharaj is mentioning often, that the soul is originally female. So, you know, so we can understand that all these descriptions very much applicable to us. So we can learn a lot from these descriptions. In a sense, especially in this chapter, queens are described. So, and we're not queens. And, you know, we're not even simple ladies according to spiritual standards, as Maharaj also pointing out that we all have Purusha Bhava, we all want to enjoy, so we want to imitate male, and in this way, you know, some of us play roles of males, some of us play roles of females, but this is actually, you know, manifestation of our cheating propensity. That females are not real females, and males are those females who've been, you know, who took their emancipation right to the extreme and manifested their masculine form like that. So, and, you know, the principle for us that we need to come back to this, our original natural position, you know, which is long way to go, that what to speak of queens, we're, you know, we're resembling, how you call it, stray ladies, you know, those who went astray from home.
Wanton women.
Something like that, you know, and, you know, earlier in the chapter, the description of prostitutes from Dwaraka was given. So, you know, if we want to go in this way, at least we should come to the level of, you know, to that level, to be at least cultured prostitutes, if we want to enjoy with others, you know. But ideally, we should be enjoying with Krishna. I mean, Krishna should be enjoying with us like that, and that would make us happy. Should I continue to my
Go ahead. Finish.
Okay. After his long absence, his beloved kings were besides themselves with joy upon seeing him. Roused from their meditations, they instantly stood up from their cushioned seats, shyly covering their faces, as was the show's social custom. Hesitantly taking in the wonderful sight of their lord with their coy glances, the bashful queens first of all embraced Krishna in their innermost core of their hearts. As their love for him unburdened itself from its initial restraint, they embraced him visually. Next, they sent their sons to embrace him. As the most cultured of women, they tried to restrain themselves, yet at last the wives of Lord Krishna could not help but freely shed tears of joy upon seeing him after such a lengthy separation. Sutta Goswami rhetorically asks the sages, what women have had the fortune of seeing the Lord's lotus feet can be detached from them. So I just wanted to make last point, and this is actually, I was asking Sutra Maharaj that what I should, you know, add to my presentation, which would be, you know, like fulfillment of the desires of teachers. And he mentioned if I could bring in some controversy and, you know, show how this controversy is resolved through, you know, these descriptions, that would be best thing. And, well, the controversy I could think of is very simple, and I think it is very relevant to many of us, that the controversy is that when we came first to Krishna consciousness, we were enjoying really blissful times, right? And then this sort of joy, this strong taste went away somehow or other, right? And we're struggling, you know, basically the rest of the time we spend in trying to figure out how to get back, how to get back there. And why it is so, actually, you know, what is the solution is actually explained in here. That the behavior of queens of Dwaraka, that they actually wanted to embrace Krishna and enjoy these kind of relationships, but because of the social customs, because it was not to be done, they just embraced him in their hearts, and then next they sent their sons to embrace Krishna, and they were enjoying like this because their sons were embracing Krishna. And this is the principle, actually, exemplified here, that if we want to be really happy in Krishna consciousness, then we should make Krishna happy. And Krishna consciousness means that he wants others to be happy and he doesn't care about himself. This is Krishna, basically. This is why he is the Supreme Lord forever. Because his consciousness is the most selfless of all, like that. And so, queens manifesting this selflessness, that they would like to enjoy with Krishna, but because this is better thing to do, let their sons enjoy with Krishna, like that. So, in this way, we can understand that the principle behind what Lord Chaitanya gave us, that we give Krishna to others. We do everything to make others come up in Krishna consciousness, make others happy in Krishna consciousness. This is the mood. And this is how we can get back to these happy times, which we were initially enjoying. And, just to say a few words about the course and our teachers, that we can see that this is what Bhaktivedanta Purna Maharaj and Sotra Maharaj are trying to do. They're trying to create the atmosphere and facilitate us, you know, so that we could have this taste of Krishna consciousness. And as a result, we can see that we are feeling happy. At least I'm feeling happy. And I can see that both of our teachers enjoy this process very much also. So this is how it is implemented, and they're showing very nice example, which is hopefully will be followed by us, at least most of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'd like to just comment that just as both Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita expand from Chatushloki, four slokas. So I've said often, this course expands out of two shlokas that, due to events that actually both of us, actually all three of us, have had to go through by Krishna's mercy. So two verses have become, you know, stand out in relief in my personal mind and my perception of Krishna consciousness. And I think Uttama Shloka Prabhu has, in his concluding words, kind of gave up a nice wrap-up purport of one of them, and that is that satam prasanga mamavira samvido bhavanti hritkarna arasayana katha. So it begins satam prasanga with very strong, very nice, solid association. Bhavanti hritkarna arasayana katha. Then we can gain, we can achieve the means by which hearing Srimad Bhagavatam becomes satisfying to the ear. You see, when in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, when the senses are described, or the urges of the senses are described, very often the term shravanadi is used, which means the whole process of even materially losing control of our senses. This is out of the context of spiritual life. Losing control of your senses, becoming dragged away, like becoming a godas, it begins with hearing. You see? At first, I remember, speaking for myself, I was a rather nice young boy. I remember I was living overseas because my father was a military man. So I grew up in a very remote but interesting corner of the world called the Azores Islands. They belong to Portugal. And that's where I spent formative years of my youth from about age five to 10, living on these semi-tropical Atlantic islands with palm trees and cowherd men and their cows in the streets. And it was quite, you know, for an American, middle-class American boy, it was quite a different upbringing. And then my father was transferred to the United States. And I remember when I was entered the 10th grade, no, sorry, it was the 5th grade of grammar school. I was a shy boy, and I came into the class very hesitantly, and I kind of smiled at everyone. And my teacher, lady teacher, she remarked to everyone, "Now here's a nice boy." Just see from his smile, he's a very nice boy. And I used to be a nice boy up until about age 12 or 13, when it was around that time I got a transistor radio, and I started to hear this new music that was coming out from England by groups like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and the Kinks and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We won't go into that. And my consciousness started to change, first through the ears, and then all the other senses followed through. And then after that, I was not such a nice boy anymore. In fact, as I was telling some devotees yesterday, I asked them, "Have you ever heard of a group called the Psychedelic Stooges?" And they said, "No." And then I said, "Have you ever heard of a pop star named Iggy Pop?" And they go, "Oh yeah, we've heard of him." And I said, "Well, my best friend was the equipment handler of that group. So I was intimate with the Iggy Pop." I don't know if our boys know nothing about this, but he is. Iggy Pop is still today, 30 years later, an icon among the more deranged section of our young people. Because when I knew him, this was when he was only in Detroit known, he was literally a psychopath who was just expressing his insanity through a microphone and his stage performance, which include very atrocious acts of self-mutilation on stage. He would, as I was describing, he would come out with a box of wine bottles. He would start hurling them out at the audience, but by the end he'd start breaking them and then throwing them. And then the last one he would break and then start to carve his bare chest with broken glass and bleed all over and keep singing his songs. And sometimes he would jump off the stage without any warning. Now it's a whole ritual in these punk rock clubs. Someone jumps and everyone catches him. But he started this with no warning. So the natural impulse of people is to get out of the way. Jump off the stage and just fall on the ground and then get up bruised and bloody and keep singing. And he would look around and someone whose face he didn't like, he would just punch them right in the face. This was in 1967. So, you know, you're of the younger generation who think you really saw something far out during the punk rock revolution. I'm telling you, you have no idea what was going on in Detroit in the 60s. So, yeah, by that time I was quite opposite from a nice boy. And Shravanadi. So everything begins with hearing, you see. And so we have to change the quality of our hearing, first of all, and all the other senses will follow through. So to get this Kritkarna Rasayana Katha, the first term used in this verse is Satam Prasanga. Everything comes from that. And this is one of the chief goals. And then hand in hand with that, to get that Prasanga, we have to come to the Nirupadi stage. We have to drop our masks, our pretensions, our profiles, because these are just in the way, you see. We are, even in the Vaishnava society, we can take on upadis, which are sort of varnashram, in the varnashram sense, approved sattvic designations, but they can become misused to be, trying to think of a fancy word, but anyway, to be alankaras, you know, alankaras of our false ego. Alankara means decorations of our false ego. Just like in the Soviet, we have many Russians here. You remember Comrade Brezhnev with all of his medals, you see. So, Deputy GBC, Assistant GBC, Full GBC, Sannyasi, Guru, Avatar, on and on and on. We can take on these designations, and if we think that this is an advancement in Krishna consciousness, we are severely cheating ourselves. It's the most tragic kind of self-cheating. So to attain this Satam Prasanga, we have to rid ourselves of upadis as much as possible. Although, the principle of Yukta Vairagya requests us, you know, that we should, if we have an ability granted to us, by Krishna through our nature, use that in the Lord's devotional service. But don't become puffed up by it. Don't identify it with it as yourself. You see, just as we are not this body, so we are also not the abilities, we are not the intelligence of this body that, for example, I may be known in ISKCON. I know I'm not trying to blow my own horn, as they say, but I have a reputation as being one of ISKCON's intellectuals. So if I take that on as a potty and put my nose in the air, that I know more than anybody else here, then that is going to become cause of my fall down. But if I use this intelligence that Krishna has given me to try to help others, and I very much appreciate Uttava Sloka making that point, to try to help others see deeper into the subject matter and derive more taste from it, then I'm satisfying Krishna with this gift he has given me. And maybe, hopefully, he'll even give me more intelligence the next time I have to take birth, because surely I will have to take birth again in this material world. I know I've accepted that. Anyway, it's time to stop. So thank you very much.